have 60 seconds to comply.
I think you'd better do what he says, Mr. Kenny.
You have 60 seconds to comply. This is minute 37.
Part man?
Part machine.
All pod.
This minute begins with Hedgecock saying, "Get those men by the stairs now, hit it," and ends with him saying, "All right, Miller, don't hurt the mayor." And we're joined once again by Luke Milton of Dungeons & Drongos. Hello.
Yeah, I think he meant Dungeons & Drongos fame.
Of Dungeons & Drongos.
Oh, yes, of course.
Director, producer, writer, star.
Playboy, millionaire.
Exactly.
How are you?
Cockmaster.
We're doing pretty well getting through this.
Slowly getting through this movie.
1 minute at a time. It's the highlight of my week, frankly.
Wow, you must have a... No, I'm not going to make it.
I enjoy your company, Simon, you know.
Oh, thank you. We've actually had a little bit of a delay, but yeah, it's fun to be back in the podcasting chair.
Mm-hmm.
And this is so... My first note is, this is actually the first time the media sees RoboCop. And so, it's pretty interesting. Like, you know, just imagine, this high tension crime scene, the mayor's being kidnapped. What the fuck is that?
Yeah, everyone, all the reporters just swarm on him because it's just, hold up though, hold up. I know people's lives are on the line, but what are those?
Holy shit. Is that a fucking robot?
Is the mayor being kidnapped or is the mayor the taking everyone hostage?
So it is, the reporter says, terrorism has never been a factor in city politics before, but that changed when former city councilman Miller entered City Hall with a gun. He is now on the second floor holding Mayor Gibson and his staff hostage.
And it's funny, this predates January 6th as well. A little bit of political humour there.
I do not recall.
Hmm.
January 6th, where the bloody Trumpers decided to go and march into City Hall.
Oh.
The Senate, whatever it was called.
Right, I didn't know the date for that. Right, I gotcha.
Yeah. the Republicans are trying to stop the investigation.
Holds a mirror up to life.
Yes. RoboCop drives right through the police tape. I don't know why I just love that little detail of I do not give a fuck moving right through. Just being efficient.
Police tape, I am police, move away tape, snap.
Yeah, he makes as big a commotion outside as possible. He drives through the barrier. He attracts all the media. He is a big shiny metal man walking up into the building. And that is the one thing that the hostage taker who keeps looking out the window fails to see.
Yep.
Yes, I know.
We have a theory going now that RoboCop is specifically designed to make the most dramatic entrance possible.
Oh, yeah.
We've seen that. This is the third time now. Because the first time, there's a convenience store robbery. He just busts those doors apart. He steps in like it's just, I don't even know, like a music video. It's just, And then when he faces the rapist, it's just like he's got the headlights behind him. It's the most epic shot imaginable. So yeah, I think it's part of his programming.
Silhouette against the wall, just kind of don't fuck with me. It's like his own bat signal. He's his own bat signal.
He is.
Well, that's something I want to bring up actually, and it's going to you're gonna have to answer a question about a couple of minutes from now because I won't be in the next episode, and I don't know what directly happens, but if I'm correct in my memory, does RoboCop end up busting through the wall to get this guy?
Yes.
Okay, yes, so it struck me instantly when they said Miller, because in 1986, Frank Miller's Dark Knight Returns came out, and Batman goes on his return rampage, which is not dissimilar to this rampage that RoboCop's currently on. And at one point, stops a hostage situation by smashing through the wall. And I thought this was an homage to Miller's work. And Miller's work also continually uses TV cutaways, and it's very satirical about the current political climate. And then, of course, when RoboCop 2 comes around, Frank Miller actually wrote the script. Yes. So they were certainly aware of him and his work. And I think a year later, this is a nod to Frank Miller and that particular sequence.
There is a Miller energy through RoboCop for sure. And I don't... Did he have any involvement with the first film?
I don't know if he did, but I think that they... I wouldn't be surprised if someone read the book and was inspired by it.
Hmm.
So I'm just quickly going through, because this is, I think, the punch through the wall scene is minute 39. Because the next minute is when they're doing the negotiation with the SUX thermograph. And it looks like it was in the novelization. Let me just double check. Yeah, punches through the. So it's in the original novelization, which is probably, which we think is probably based off like one of the early scripts. I think the script had been around since like 1984-85, or at least, you know, I think the ball got rolling on the production around about that time. So it could be a coincidence. It could also be that maybe Miller had access to the original script, maybe they knew Frank Miller. That could have just been a nod. I have no direct knowledge about this, but I think your theory works really well.
Is he say, is it Miller? Is it Miller in the script?
It is Miller in the script, and it is Miller in the book.
Yeah, I just think it's interesting.
It feels like it's got Frank Miller energy. It really does. But that could just be like, you know, the homages to like the, you know, hard-boiled kind of stuff.
Just the zeitgeist at the time.
Could be, yeah, but I do like your theory, and I'm willing to say, yeah.
And obviously they brought Frank on to write the sequel, and I think that's crazy that a lot of people forget that you've got like Frank Miller and it's directed by the guy that did Empire Strikes Back. I mean, that's a pretty crazy combination.
Ivan Kershner?
Irvin, yeah.
Irvin Kershner, yeah, sorry, yes. I knew I'd get that pronunciation wrong. Cool. But yeah, like we'll tackle RoboCop 2 eventually. I think we're just, you know, almost like it's destiny to finally do that one. RoboCop 3 eventually, maybe.
Yeah, we could that, double
you
that.
Have to. And you have to do every episode.
That's going to be a year from now.
You have to do every episode of the TV series.
Yes, 1 minute at a time.
I
do own that on DVD.
I have a feeling there's an axe to grind in there somewhere that you need to get to.
Simon's a very angry man. He's got very strong opinions about pop culture.
I have very strong feelings about ballistics, yes.
Yeah. I have very strong opinions about ice cream flavours. So, we're both doing important work.
Well, I've actually got very strong opinions about vegetables, so you know what, we've all got something.
Yeah, but when we finally do the ice cream and vegetable podcast, I think that's where it's just going to flood out and, like, it's going to get very heated, which is kind of a bad thing for an ice cream.
Fucking anti-nutrients? What is this shit?
Fuck you, things that grow in the earth, bastards.
Oxalates? Fuck off.
Photosynthesis, my ass.
Yeah. I think this minute is just a really lovely example of the RoboCop world building and the just how perfectly it does all the exposition without it making it feel like exposition. There's a lot of that going on. I don't know, nowadays Nolan especially is so bad for it. I don't know why.
Yeah,
it seems to be a popular thing again.
Nolan wouldn't tell the story in order. And I don't know if that's always his thing, or if he's just got a really clumsy editor who goes like, "Mr. Nolan, your film's for whoops," and then like smashes it all over the floor, and then has to piece it together at the last minute.
He does like shooting on film though, doesn't he? He's not a digital guy. I think he shoots on film and transfers it to digital.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
Yeah, the film would shatter everywhere, and then they would have to stick it back together. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Because he shoots it on film, then transfers it to large sheets of glass. And then he's
well, that's how you project it.
And then he's editor trips. And then he says, "Dunkirk. Well, I've got three storylines here, but they're all mixed together."
Well, it's Dunkirk, so you have to shoot it like it was back in the World Wars. You know, you can't use digital editing techniques.
Yeah, you got to be accurate.
Was his Dunkirk like mixing them all up now?
Yeah, Dunkirk.
What was the other one? The one shot one.
No.
Christopher Nolan did that one with the three different timelines that were.
Oh
with
no,
Tom
no no
Hardy.
Oh god.
Was that not Dunkirk?
That was
one shot.
Is 1917 the one shot one?
Yeah.
Oh god, I can't remember.
So he did Dunkirk, and that's the which is about time, I think. And oh my god, yeah, those movies are identical.
yeah, and it's got like 3 weeks before the thing, and then 1 week before the thing, and then like an hour before the thing, and they're all intercut together.
I was going to say somebody dropping and shattering the film to pieces would explain the plot of Dark Knight Rises. But this isn't a Nolan bashing thing. We'll probably do that sometime in the future.
That plot's in order because Batman spent an hour in a pit. He spent an hour in a hole in that movie.
Dale dug a hole.
Yeah, so we can't talk about the SUX yet. That's in the next minute.
Oh, here's the funny thing. You bring up time shenanigans. So in the original novelization, there's supposed to be a week between the dick shooting scene and the hostage situation. And it's like the whole thing is implied that what's really weird, actually. So before that, there's like a small scene where RoboCop goes to rest and it does nothing. Like, I don't know why they added it in. But, like, it becomes this thing where, like, RoboCop is, like, this urban myth and, like, people in the people are backing RoboCop and nobody's seen him, which makes no sense.
It's Batman again.
Yeah, so it makes sense for, like, you know, in this one night, RoboCop goes from, like, stopping these small crimes and then just goes into this highly publicized thing and, like, that's just, like, the big day.
Well, why would you want to lose the momentum either? I mean, you've just seen him, like, shoot a guy in the dick and now he's driving through police tape. Yeah. This scene is
punching people.
Yeah,
through
this
walls.
Scene is all anticipation of RoboCop's really gonna mess this guy up.
Hmm. Yeah, I do love this scene, and it's like, yeah, why would you? What kind of scriptwriter would think, yeah, what we really need now is a break in the action? No, escalate.
Mm-hmm.
Then break. So yeah, I do like how this scene also sets up the whole. This, like, sequence of things, it's really just setting up RoboCop's powers to a degree. This is, like, the origin story. So, yeah, thermal vision. We've not established
that's
true,
that. Yeah.
Yeah, but you had a really good opportunity to establish thermal vision 1 minute ago.
Exactly.
Yeah, I guess they had already wrote the thermal vision into the mayor scene. And just like, oh, shit, we just got to shoot the guy in the dick.
Yeah, because you couldn't delete things back then. You just had to keep writing.
Yeah.
No, it was all on paper, so you'd have to go and, like, you know, go over with the Tippex and, or what's it called, liquid paper, go back over the script and retype it, and it glugs up your keyboard.
Yeah, I mean, who can be bothered with that?
No, just make a sequel.
Yes, it all gets fixed in the sequel. This scene, according to Ed Neumeier, I'm kind of sweetly skipping to the commentary because this is really interesting. This was actually inspired by a real-life shooting in San Francisco when a mayor and a councilman got shot and killed by another councilman who had obviously been similar circumstances. But, Ed kind of wrote the good happy ending for this.
I wonder how many hostage situations have ever been successful. I don't think in terms of, you know, the hostage taker actually getting what they wanted and getting away. I have never heard of an instance where it succeeded. Because once you're surrounded, I mean, what do you think's going to happen?
I think a lot of them end up with either the cops raiding and murdering a lot of people, or the hostage taker murderifying a lot of people. I don't think it ever works out as cleanly as possible, but I've not done the research.
Yeah, I've read a book. It's really good, actually. It's called Never Split the Difference by an FBI hostage negotiator. And, I mean, it doesn't really focus on that aspect of it. It's more about, you know, the psychological skills you can apply to daily life and negotiation. And one interesting bit of trivia that stuck with me is he said that in real life, you know, in movies, you see, like what we're seeing here in RoboCop, there's one man talking through, what do you call that thing? The bloody...
Negotiation.
No, like the radio thing.
Ransom?
Loudspeaker sort of thing. Yeah, they're talking up to... yeah, or through like a walkie-talkie thing. Yes, there's always like one guy who's radioing up to the hostage taker, and that's all you need. No. A real-life negotiation situation is going to have about four people at least. There's one person who's just going to focus on tone of voice, another person who's going to be like a psychologist, going to focus on emotion, another one is going to focus very specifically on wording and how much you can determine about someone's thinking through how they structure sentences and stuff. So ultimately, yes, it might seem like there's only one person, because there is one person doing the talking. There's about three other people in a van somewhere, all listening to the same thing, analyzing it.
Yeah, I guess it's one of those things, if you're the talker, you're concentrating on the guy on the other end. You're not necessarily, maybe you just can't, like, compartmentalize your brain and say, oh yeah, I'm just going to analyze this. You get someone else to do that.
It's like E.T., like, you think it's one dude, but someone's doing the eyes.
Yeah, exactly. It is like working a puppet. Yeah, so the one negotiator who's doing the talking, he's just the puppet. He's not really in control there. But as someone who has done many, many hours of podcasting and listened to myself in conversation, it's definitely made me better at communication. But I think there's always going to be things that I go, I feel so bad. I didn't respond to them when they said whatever, or maybe I could have been more clear in what I said here and there. It's really hard to not only talk and listen, but then also think of the next thing you want to say. It's very difficult.
I think more people could benefit from talking and thinking at the same time, myself included.
What? That is a hot take.
I'm here for them.
Yeah.
So, did we have any more notes for this minute?
You're going to love this note. This is in the commentary. So, John Davison actually made a comment that they could never shoot the costume from behind because the butt would wiggle when he walked. So we've gone from all talking about cocks to the butts. Yeah. So this is one of the reasons in this particular scene they didn't shoot RoboCop walking up the stairs. It was also very hard for Weller to do it in the costume as well. It looked very awkward.
All right.
And also, this is one of those infamous shots where you never see RoboCop emerging from the car properly.
Yeah, I was about to mention that. They really cut around it so perfectly. You sort of see him mostly from the waist up, the chest up, and then there's a wider shot of... he's already got one leg out of the car.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where normally you don't expect to see that kind of shot in full anyway, so just very... they got lucky there.
Yeah,
I think that's fine as well. Yeah. Like, screenwriting, arrive late, leave early. I don't need to see him walk up the stairs. I know what he's doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just need to cut away, have a nice idea that he's going into the building, you know, cut to him, like, it's kind of the gag in Ghostbusters where, like, you know, how many more sets of stairs we go. It's a nice cutaway. If we had to follow those guys through 42 levels worth of stairs,
But now that I'm thinking about, there's a short film I want to do with some other Movies by Minute guys, I'm just realizing what goes into every single shot, and... RoboCop also is making me very aware of, you really don't have to shoot that much. A lot of it is just so implied. It is, our brain is filling so much of it in. And you definitely notice that when you do movies by minute, because you're paying very close attention. You realize, I had it all wrong. I'd imagined a whole different thing.
Well, look at that. Look at that shot at like 55 seconds into the minute and compare it to like the... shot of the street at about 3 seconds in, where you can see there's not actually much there. There's a handful of cars. But that 55-second shot is so beautifully put together, in the sense that you've got a cop in the foreground, you've got a loudspeaker, you can see a spotlight, you can see an illuminated skyscraper that tells you you're in the city, and then you see a group of helmets and guns pointing. Like, everything you need to know is in that scene, and in that shot, without them having to fill an entire street.
It's a lot of fun to see where... What do you actually really need visually to tell this story?
So this is a perfect example of show, don't tell. We don't need... This is Lieutenant Hedgecock, and I am the Chief Lieutenant of the Hostage Negotiation Service, and I am talking to this guy... No, we take the context clues, we fill in most of the details, so we don't need the backstory. We get it through some of the external dialogue, all that stuff. I miss when movies did this more often, and a lot of modern storytelling is a lot more tell, don't show. We need to explain the backlog. We need to explain the backstory. We need an origin story. We need to... Why is Cruella De Vil evil?
Hey, Luke, do you want to bitch about Alien Covenant with me?
I don't even... No, I didn't even remember it. I've only seen it once.
Yeah. But I was going to say that you...
Is that the one where Fassbender kisses himself?
Yes.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, there you go. Very memorably. But Luke, I was going to say that there are a few things about writing in general that you taught me and that have stuck with me. I was so terrible at writing back when we first met, but I'm starting to get the hang of it now. And yeah, one of them was that, enter late and leave early, where it's like, oh, I don't even have to show all that other stuff that leads from one point to the other. I can just, drop you in media res. And the other one was that every scene should ultimately have a point. Every scene should be stepping you closer to that finish line. And it's such a... They're simple things, but...
Yeah, really I think you can audit a script or a piece of writing, and you can sort of look at each section and say, well, what is it telling us? You know, what information do we get out of it? And then look at, well, how much of that is actually necessary? What do you want your ideal audience to feel?
Yeah.
Like, you know, what are you trying to get out of them? Like, and I think this is about that sense of ceremony and anticipation that Robocop's going to go and do a third wild thing, rule of threes.
Yeah.
He's going to go in there and do something crazy. And this is a step up from the previous one, because now we have an audience. Now everybody's going to see him do this thing.
Yeah. There's been a really nice progression, escalation in these few scenes.
Yeah. And he's public, so then we can start to talk about, you know, what it actually means to have a robot cop out in the place.
The media break stuff was a late addition. I'm not sure if it's in... I think it's in some of the script, but, like, by the novelization, I don't think media break even exists. It's an interesting break when you get to media break in the latter half of the scene, and then all of a sudden it's like, what is a RoboCop? Like, this is like... At this point, the question's even asking these questions, and like, in universe, like, they're just going, we don't know what the fuck's going on either, but we love it. And again,
that's a technique which is used all throughout Dark Knight Returns, is the vox pops and the media shows commenting on that, sort of doing that larger view of the world.
Yeah.
That sort of extends beyond our character's perspective, and RoboCop himself does have a very limited perspective in this film. He doesn't articulate himself, so you need to see the world commenting on a lot of these things that he can't articulate.
I think that's why I really do like RoboCop's progression. Like, we get Murphy, we learn type Murphy, then we get RoboCop, and he is just this blank slate, emotionless character, and I find that's really compelling when he starts to regain his humanity, and it becomes about, well, Murphy trying to basically gain whatever shred of humanity he has left. I find that really compelling compared to, again, the reboot. At this point, Murphy's gone through this traumatic thing. It is really good, but there's no struggle
there. I gotta be honest, I just like seeing a robot shoot shit.
Yes.
Yeah, I kind of wish they just did more of that. So, like, even in this part of the reboot, is like, RoboCop's not even had an action scene. We're 30-odd minutes in, and, like, we've not done anything. I completely agree. I love the cutting into the world and seeing we're experiencing RoboCop through the world as well. It's great storytelling.
It's like the world is a character.
Yeah, they need to punch up. They need to punch up the characterization a bit more.
Yeah, Detroit is a character in this film.
Definitely.
Just like New York is a character.
Always.
In Sex and the City.
New York is the only main character in the MCU.
Yes, actually. So, do we have any more notes for this minute?
I'm just having a quick look.
Good minute, 10 out of 10. Minute again.
Yes.
No, I think I've got everything.
So it's time for gaslighting RoboCop.
Alex, how do you feel?
I feel fine, Dr. Norton.
This minute begins with sad, floating Murphy face and ends with him saying, so far, Dr. Norton seems like a nice guy. And you'll notice I never, ever say RoboCop, because, I mean, at least not at this stage, he's still got his mind, so, he's still Murphy.
He's still RoboFlag to me. he'll always be Robo. Now, my only note is the blandest phone call.
Yes, and my only note was, enhance. Enhance.
Enhance. I skipped through it because it was another just long... close up again.
No, that's it. That's the perfect description. It's just another long.
But then Abby Cornish showed up and I was excited. I love Abby Cornish. She's great.
She's great in this. She really is. And I wish, I mean, we've talked about this before, that if they had bumped her up to be more of a central character, that could have given us something new to play with.
Well, it was refreshing. I liked looking at her.
Yes. Good face. 10 of 10.
Do recommend. No, it's funny how this it's FaceTime before FaceTime, isn't it?
Yeah, kind of. It's like, it's not.
I'm fairly certain teleconferencing was a thing.
I don't know why he's trying to hide the fact that he's got a robot body when she consented to the procedure in the first place. Also, is she kind of a mechanophile? She's like, oh, you look beautiful. No, you really, I love you more now.
I'm paused at 33 seconds. I recommend everybody does that.
Oh.
Do I have to?
and I just feel like she's thinking, God, how lucky I am to have a man who looks at me like that.
So glad that these mechanical devices always function well under emotion.
He's got that pasty data face.
Well, shit.
He does a little bit.
It's not like quite as smeared in butter as Data was.
Oh my god. So that is, I guess, don't get me started on that. That's one of my things where it's like the lighting in the movies really, really ruined the effect of that makeup.
Oh yeah, the Data makeup in those. Horrifying. Yeah. They weren't the most well shot, well lit movies, those ones.
So what was it,
33 seconds. It's just his like blank fish face.
Yeah.
Just sort of looking at her like he's pooed himself, and you think like, why? What is she like? What is he trying to portray? He doesn't know. Like, he feels so lost as an actor here. Like, he doesn't know. Am I an emotionless robot? Am I a person? Do I remember? Do I not? Like,
yeah.
And also, I think her performance is, it's so bland and quiet. You know, it should be a very intense emotional scene here, and it's like, how are you? And are you
she looks. I think she looks warm and invested, and she looks like she really cares about him. But he's just giving her nothing back. You think she'd be saying, "What is wrong with you? What's up? What are you doing?"
Yeah.
Here's a question. Then we go. Hang on. How long is this the first time they've communicated? Because I get the sense in this at this point, this is the first time she's seen him since the accident. Yeah, there's no like, holy shit, I've been so worried for so long. It's just like, hi, how are you going? You're a robot now.
Yeah. Skip ahead, like 58 seconds. What do you think about this piece of technology? Because this happens a fair bit. So we see him looking at her on a monitor, and now the shot's reversed. So we're seeing the... So obviously the monitor
from the back
shows the reverse of what he's looking at on the front. Why would anyone want a laptop or a phone which showed other people what you were looking at?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, because it serves no function for the user.
Mm.
Yeah, privacy is kind of out the fucking window. And also, I like to see the person I'm talking to. Oh, and the shit behind me on the desk.
I mean, it might be a nice option. Like, I'm, sitting behind a desk and everyone else is in the office and I go, hey, look at the Eternals trailer, and I play it.
He's a robot cop. Why does he have to look at a monitor?
It might be useful in a work environment where, the boss can walk past and go, yep, you're definitely doing your work. Okay, that's good.
I'm breaking my rule, though. I know it's all theatre. It's just for sure.
I think it's worth discussing.
I'm sorry. What was that?
It's all theatre. It's just a bit of visual shenanigans.
Yeah. But it is fun.
It's visual shorthand to say this is the future.
Yeah, it is fun to think about, how does this apply to our real world? Would we want this? What does that mean? Science fiction is supposed to get you to think and talk about these things. So LED screens now, there's ones that you can actually roll up. They don't need the backing, you know, the Globes and all of that to actually, you know, that's what was making TV so big for so long. Now it's literally just the screen. And so it is conceivable that at some point in the near future we could have these, but I think that application would be purely novel more than anything.
It's nice to know that the lighting in the future is still very unflattering.
Also, he has a photo of his son on the desk, so...
It looks like the son's, like, headshot from the sitcom he's in.
So I guess he's got an office, he's decorated it all out. There's another photo frame to his left. Oh, there's two more, so that could be more family photo. Did his wife bring them over?
Sorry, why did they give him tear ducts? Just, he's a robot cop. Why does
I think it's still his head. I think it's still his organic head.
Yeah, I don't think they didn't waste any time removing the tear ducts.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the thing is, his face got fucked up. You know, he's literally, one of his eyes was just, like, got a shard of shit into it. It's like... I know. I'm overthinking it.
Does he cry out of that eye?
Well, that's it. He should have one manly tear.
One single manly tear. Yeah, it's true.
One single manly tear. It is a nice scene, but yeah, it's...
What's nice about it?
It's a nice emotional scene between the two characters, but it's, again, it doesn't do anything. It doesn't go anywhere. I'm sorry, my brain is into editing mode. It's like, did this scene need to be there? Or couldn't the big emotional reveal be when he finally meets his wife for the first time? And would actually lead to his emotional breakdown, which leads to him, oh shit, we got to get rid of his emotions because we're literally due on stage in 5 minutes. Why am I a better editor than this?
That was all my notes.
Yeah.
I didn't have any notes.
No.
No, but you have colorful contributions.
Yes, very much so.
That we appreciate.
Green!
Blue. Red with impotent rage.
All right, so thanks for joining us again, Luke. Where can we find you?
That's all right. You can listen to my podcast, Dungeons & Drongos. You can find it at dungeonsanddrongos.com. Real play. Dungeons and Dragons podcast in Fantasy Australia. A lot of improv comedy. We're up to about episode 150-something. We've done a lot of them, and it's a lot of fun.
You make so many. I can't keep up.
It's a big adventure.
You know what you need to do, Luke? You need to do one podcast a minute at a time and then just stretch that fucker out.
Yeah. No, it's like a big ongoing TV series. It's a lot's happened. Big adventure, jump in there and enjoy it.
I was going to say, it's a good thing you say just jump in there. I mean, the usual question is, it's like 150 episodes. Do I need to play catch up? And I think how you tend to do things, just go and listen.
You could do, but at the same time, there is a lot of ongoing narrative. There's been some...
It goes back to episode one.
Well, look, people do. We get amazed. We constantly hear from people that have just binged the whole thing, and which would take longer than watching all of Game of Thrones. So, it's...
Hey, the best character is... What's his face? Old Alf. Alf's knockoff.
Alf the Steward, who dies in episode two.
Alf the Steward, yes. By the Flaming Crows.
Yeah.
But yeah, highly recommend, go listen to it. It's probably the best D&D podcast I've ever listened to about Fantasy Australia.
Definitely, by far.
High praise.
No, it is definitely very funny, so go check it out.
All right, you can find me at Trivian Designs and my Patreon and my YouTube channel. If you listened to the last minute, I guess you already know where all that is.
Yeah, and you can find me on Fandom Crossing. I have YouTubes and things that has, like, you know, Kung Pao to the minute. Oh, I got my photography page up and running now, which is all my new things I've been doing for TAFE and expressing myself creatively.
Yep, hopefully we're doing another one soon.
Yeah, well, I've just posted our collaboration with Major Kira from Deep Space Nine, so go check that shit out on Facebook.
Yeah.
But you can check us out on Simplecast, Spotify, Google, Amazon, whatever it is, all those Apple Podcasts. That was the one I try to remember, not Amazon, Apple Podcasts.
Yes.
You'd think I'd remember the biggest fucking platform on this fucking planet, but there you go. And go like, share, subscribe, rate, review, all that yummy algorithmic shite, you know, feed the algorithm, all that, you know,
come say hello on Instagram.
Instagram. I love your MySpace.
Oh, yeah, we got to do MySpace. Yep.
Our MySpace is fucking rocking.
Until next time.
Robocock.
Thank you.